This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Well, it's Tuesday, which means it's time to check in with WBUR's Common Health. And Common Health co-host Carrie Goldberg joins us now. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Meghna.
So what's going on the blog this week?
Electronic medical records, which are actually part of an incredibly huge, monumental effort by the federal government to shift the whole country away from paper in doctors' offices and toward electronic medical records, the idea being that you could both improve care, improve patient communication, and eventually even cut costs. So this is a gigantic thing that's going on nationally, and Boston is one of the hot spots for it. We have a lot of researchers, we have companies that do it, but it's been hard for Common Health to actually write about it because it's hard to bring it home to people, to patients.
How would it actually change the care that I get?
Right. So I am thrilled to announce that we have an extremely lively post about a dog and his medical record, and for that I am very grateful to Ken Farbstein, who wrote the post for us. Ken is a professional patient advocate at Patient Advocare, and he's the author of the book Getting Your Best Health Care, Real World Stories for Patient Empowerment. So, Ken, welcome to Radio Boston.
Oh, thank you. It's fun to be here.
So tell us about your dog and why your dog's medical records matter to us as humans.
Well, our dog is 10 years old now, and that means that he's in old age. And I realized over the years, and I brought in his medical record here, maybe you can hear it, 10 years of visit summaries, that has his photo on it, and it's got color-coded instructions to us, and it's very
you've got it there
elaborate.
With you. Can I take a look at it?
You absolutely can. That's one of
are
them.
Are there HIPAA rules for animals? So this is very interesting. It's a couple pages long, and it's a printout, a color printout, with your the vet's examination findings, history of symptoms. Oh, and then is this a list of your dog's nose and throat, lungs and breathing, basically how he's doing system by system.
It's more than you would ever want to know, but it's all there.
And Meghna, a big point of Ken's post was that this whole printout is just gloriously clear, and they leave the office knowing exactly what they should be doing with Jackson, their dog, which is often not true for us as humans when we leave our doctor's office.
When I give book talks, I ask the audience if anyone gets this from their doctor, and very rarely does someone raise their hand and say, yes, I do.
Actually, when you think about it, it's kind of remarkable because oftentimes we get pretty complicated or detailed medical instructions just given, you know, verbally, and it's up to the patient to write it down or remember it somehow or just keep track of it after they leave the doctor's office.
Absolutely. And so for one elderly woman who I've worked with recently, that she was told by the doctor that she needed tests, and she thought that was because of an advanced some progression of her chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And she was so anxious, having heard that she really didn't hear the rest of the instructions during the visit. So it just all went by in a blur.
Well, let me ask you then, how does this work into this, you know, massive movement we have towards electronic medical records for human health and well-being overall?
Well, the Affordable Care Act, what people sometimes call Obamacare, has in it the requirements that eventually all doctors' practices will shift into the use of these electronic medical records.
So, Ken, there's this question about meaningful use when it comes to electronic health records. For you, how would you like to see electronic health records used? And in your mind, what is a meaningful use of it?
Well, meaningful to a patient, I think, is that the information is in hand, and it's clear, and it's actionable, they know how to act on it, and it's specific. Those are the key criteria, I think.
And are you asking for this idea to include something like what Jackson the dog gets, basically a printout that summarizes your visit to your doctor and what you should be doing thereafter?
Yes, yes. And it's in the requirement. Now, it's kind of sort of in the rules, in the rule as it's drafted now.
Already.
They say that there will be a visit summary, and it has to be available on the internet. For me, as I think about my mother and my mother-in-law and her boyfriend, and you know, they're in their late 80s, they're going strong, but they're well-educated people, but they're not going to go to the internet to get this information. They're just not. Now, I'm not asking for care as good as Jackson gets, because that might be asking too much, but just at least what the doctor's orders are, be printed on paper
and
promptly.
You walk out of the office with them.
Preferably.
Yeah. So, Ken, thank you so much. This was a really accessible window into this very complex topic.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Well, Ken Farbstein is a professional patient advocate at Patient Advocare and author of the book Getting Your Best Healthcare, Real World Stories for Patient Empowerment. And Carrie, before we wrap up today, I was wondering if we could turn back to the big story that you're one of the big stories you're working at on Common Health, and that's the story of a young girl named Riley.
That's right. Riley Sarabona. We had a big post on her last Friday, and we're going to be following her in the coming weeks. Riley is 9 years old. She lives in Kennebunk, Maine, and she has an incredibly rare disease, probably a 1 in 100 million disease called CLOVES, which was only discovered as a disease about 4 or 5 years ago. And basically, she has big sort of lumps and bumps that grow either externally on her body, or these can be sort of dangerous malformations of her arteries and veins that could actually cause her mortal danger if they go wrong.
And so far in her young 9 years, the only remedy for these growths that happen on her have been surgery, and she's had multiple surgeries thus far.
That's right.
You're going to be following Riley and her family for quite some time, and I understand that this week there was a little news in terms of her care.
Yes, a little bit. So the only remedy so far has been surgery, but she's on a clinical trial to try a new drug that they're hoping can stop these growths from happening so often. So just yesterday, Riley went in for an MRI. This is probably like her 30th MRI in her 9 years. And it is to determine whether a sort of an ominous shadow on her spine is actually something that's growing or not. And what's at stake is whether, well, aside from the fact that she could need another surgery, it's whether she can stay on this clinical trial or not. Because if she seems to be having another major growth, then that could knock her off the trial and end this hope that maybe she could have some option other than surgery.
Well, Carrie, Riley's story has received a huge amount of comment and feedback on Common Health. We've got some of the comments here now. Someone named Jean writes, "For those who believe that either they are too healthy to be required to carry medical insurance or believe they can pay for medical coverage on their own, let this story be instructive." Some other comments that really caught your eye?
Right. One of my favorite ones, because really I think so much of the story is about her family and how they all cope together and manage to appreciate the good with the bad, was a comment from a man named Barry Stein from Cambridge, who wrote, "Where does this sort of love come from? How can we get more of it in our badly malformed world? What Riley is going through with extraordinary grace is what the world is growing through without much grace." So that was both a cynical and also positive view of what's happening.
We'll be following Riley's story through the coming weeks with Carrie. We'll have links to it at our website as well at radioboston.org. Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, thanks as always.
Thank you, Meghna.
Tomorrow on Radio Boston, teaching kids with developmental disabilities how to recognize and combat abuse. That's tomorrow on our program.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from theangle@boston.com.
Our show is produced by Adam Ragusea, Jessica Alpert, Dan Mawsey, and Amory Sievertson. Our interns are Annie Ropeek and Mira Sharma.
We're getting extra help this week from Aisha Siddiqui. Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.